Hi, podcast friends. Would you like to help All the Answers become very, very deeply, deeply, profoundly popular? You can do two very simple things for us today to make us incredibly fancy in the eyes of the world. Would you go to where you listen to us and just click on 5 stars? Give us a 5-star review, and you're going to make us very, very popular. Apparently, people who can support our podcast by giving us ads and such can't do so or won't do so until they see that we have like 50 bazillion 5-star reviews. So go to your local place that you're listening to our podcast and give us 5 stars. You don't even have to write words with your brain and hands. You just click the 5 stars. How easy is that? Also, check out patreon.com and search All the Answers podcast. And there you can donate funds in small chunks that then will make you famous on the podcast. We have 3 different tiers of support. You can either get a shout out on the podcast regularly. You can come on the podcast. You can ask a question that where you won't have to be on the podcast, but your question gets answered on live air on the podcast, or various other gifts that we will give you for donating to us and helping us keep bringing you fantastic, sassy, irreverent, spiritually aware content. We love you. Patreon.com, All the Answers podcast. And please give us that 5-star review today. It'll take you 36 seconds. We love you. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt. November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're going to go to the temples, we're going to go to the pyramids, we're going to go to the Sphinx, and we're going to be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing and also like rad travels on the Nile and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin@gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, rubin@gmail.com. And for now, enjoy the cast of Pod.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
That's what she said.
Welcome to the podcast. Katie's got a mouthful of
oatmeal.
Oatmeal.
Or is it jizz?
Jesus, really? Right out the gate.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Shove it in there. Also, you're shorn, Cass.
I just usually wear a hat, I think, but you're right. I am shorn. I lied. Trimmed it all down. A beard, hair. For the listeners, I'm on camera.
You're like a sheep who has less fur.
Yes.
As I was saying that sentence.
So Katie is shelling food in my...
Really fast. I couldn't remember if sheep had fur, hair, or feathers. That actually went through my head. I was like, sheep.
I kind of want to go with none of them, but it's most... I guess it's hair, technically.
Is it fur?
It's not fur.
It's not fur?
I don't think we'd call that fur. It's a pelt. No, it's... That is a... You know what? That is...
Sheep don't have fur?
That is the question of the ages. I just want to acknowledge that I'm feeling frantic, but it is going down. But that, you know, I want to call out where I'm at right now because...
Wait, you're going down?
I'm... Jesus, yep. On my soul.
What's the franticness about?
So our guest today also happens to live on the same address as I... He's not exactly a housemate because he has like a separate apartment, but he's still like, you know, he lives here. And we have... people putting solar panels on our house. It was supposed to just take 2 days. Of course it wasn't just going to take 2 days. That's ridiculous. So I knew they were back again today, and his apartment is like right where they're like tromping around. So we were like, okay, we'll set you up here in this other room, the other part of the house, And then I was going to be in my bedroom because it's more isolated from where they'll be walking through. And then, like, the last second, so I was all set up there. And then at the last second, dude texted me. He's like, yeah, I'll be, because it's raining, I'll be focusing on the attic. Only way to the attic is through my room.
Ah.
So I was like, all right, clear out of my room, open the attic up, get him all set up, ready to come and go. Tell him not to ring the doorbell, just to come in the house and do what you got to do. So I'm like running around. But all that is me also trying to fucking please people.
Mm.
Like the practicality of it is just simple. It's like, oh, okay, I'll do that and just do that and just do that. But what I'm, this is a discussion we had last night about the pleasing thing. Like, so there's nothing wrong with like doing things for other people, helping other people. That's not codependency. What's codependency is the energy from which it emanates, or that is the, for me at least, what becomes like the sort of off-gassing of that, of doing things for people. Like, is everybody okay? Yeah, everybody's fucking fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's stressing but you. I'm really just aware of that from that last night. And then I did it again this morning.
What was last night?
Last night I was talking about, it's all about the construction and me feeling somehow guilty for the people in the house having to put up with the noise and chaos of the construction. But everybody's like, no, that's what you got to do. Like no one's stressing but me, but I'm wanting my tenants to feel at peace in their home, you know?
Sure.
Which is an admirable trait, but not when I become frantic just for my own sake.
Sure. I understand. The way they taught it to me in treatment was they said, when it's healthy to care about people's wellness, but when they aren't well and that fucks you up, like you feel responsible for their not wellness,
mm-hmm.
and that not responsible, that feeling guilty is throughout your day. It's with you. It's driving you. Blah, blah, blah. That's where we've veered into some
other territory.
Yeah. It's on a spectrum and it's over to the side or.
Well, and my particular brand of ridiculous is that nobody is unwell.
Right.
And I'm still doing that.
Because they might be unwell and then they might be upset.
Right. I'm preventatively. That's what I do, is I throw myself in front of their discomfort.
Sure. I relate to that.
Without being requested to do so.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's. Yeah, I hear that. I get it. It's also, you know what I love adding to that to make it even worse?
Oh, goody.
I love when we do it in a forceful, aggressive way.
I'm going to fucking help you.
Yeah.
I'm good. I don't need, take it.
Nobody is asking. And you're just like, deal with this love I'm giving that you don't need. Oh, God, I'm uncomfortable.
Love through service.
On this topic, but sort of tangential, I thought of both of you this morning because I sent a message. I'm going to say the person's name and we can discuss if we want to bleep it out, but I think we don't bleep it out, but we'll find out. Bill English, who is the artistic director, I believe that's his title, at SF Playhouse, a theater, mm-hmm. for professional theater in San Francisco, California, United States, America, Earth. When I was on the last show I was on, The Daughters, and I got hurt real bad and hurt my knee, and I was vomiting from the pain in a bathroom stall at the fucking theater, and I was curled in the fetal position, as I do.
This was not a show at his theater. This is at a different theater.
It was that company.
The Daughters?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the lesbian
yeah.
bar show?
Yeah.
Oh, was it their second stage thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, it was full production. It right. just wasn't on the main stage.
Right. I thought it was at some fly-by-night.
No. Nope.
But it is not.
So anyway, Bill was the producer of that show. And I'm also curious, like, why you would want to point that out.
No, because if it wasn't, I didn't want to conflate the two.
Incorrectly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Because that would be attributing something that I was mistaken about, and I apologize.
Okay. There I am. I'm in the fetal position, really fucked up in the head because I'm having, speaking of guilt, such guilt because I had to stop a performance mid-performance from passing out from pain. And then we were in rehearsal and I was trying to move forward and they were asking me to do stuff that my body wasn't ready for, which they needed to ask me to do, but my body wasn't ready for it. So there I am vomiting again in a bathroom and I wasn't getting the kind of support I could have needed at that time, like I needed. And Bill English, the artistic director and producer of that show, drove over to the space from some faraway location. Maybe he was at the main stage. Maybe he was home. I don't know. Sat with me in a blackened bathroom stall Like the lights are fully out because I can't have lights on because the light, in the way that a light makes a migraine, excuse me, worse, the light was making, I would start to puke again when the lights were on. Like the pain was, I can't understand the nervous system entirely, but that's what was happening. Bill English shows up and he, for the listener, he calls his theater an empathy gym. He believes in theory, the principle of what their theater is about is like, let's put art out to the world that deepens everyone's ability to empathize with one another. Let's learn about each other and empathize more. This man showed up and sat in a pitch black bathroom stall with me and spent the time as I'm apologizing and crying out of guilt of fucking up his show, his theater company show. He said, I want you to not worry about this show ever again. This show is not the point. You being okay is the point. And he comforted me and he nurtured me for many minutes until I was able to calm down. And then he said, very gently, I adore you and you do not need to feel bad. I'm going to have to, on a producer end, probably replace you because we have to make this show happen. And I was like, I want you to replace me because I can't do the job and it's terrible. And he said, I understand. I will hire you again, he said. I'm in the bathroom crying and certain I'll never work again because I'm leaving a show. And he says, I'm going to hire you again. I will not hold this against you. I am not even a little bit angry. Actors get injured. It happens. I'm going to help you get to your car. We're going to take you home. I will drive you if you need a ride. I could cry thinking about it right now. He said everything I needed to hear. There was not a hint of judgment. There was not a hint of, well, if you had your shit together, well, if you weren't so sensitive, well, if you were more of a real athlete, actor, person, none of that, which I was getting that from everyone else on the production, okay? I was walking my dog this morning, and this story somehow came, it like rushed back through my nervous system. I remembered it, and I sent a voice memo to Bill English this morning, which I hope he gets. I don't know if he's like a guy who listens to voice memos on a text app, but I just saw him crying on my dog walk going, Bill English, I need you to understand, as I'm thinking about my future choices in life, I regularly refer back to that moment in my mind and go, that is how I hope to comport myself. Should people be weak and injured in my presence, and I have a high pressure situation I'm in charge of, I'm going to model my behavior after what you did there. And I hope that makes your day. Have a great day. Ugh. Just because I could not get over the empathy and the love and the care.
That's so fucking awesome to hear. Because that is what's being requested, touted. Nay, demanded throughout our industry right now is more of that. And I'm glad that he is modeling it in that moment. That is awesome. Yeah.
It's sort of one of those things, you know, in life where like we all have our different priorities for qualities in people that we admire or need or desire or like.
Uh-huh.
For me, like whatever else you got going on, if you can see me in a difficult moment and hold me compassionately, it's a much harder thing to do than most people, I think, take time to acknowledge. I want to give another example because this makes the point in a different way. But to finish that sentence, holding people in compassionate care when they're not giving you what you want, that is hard to do for a human being with a nervous system.
Right.
Because your nervous system's going off and going, but I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. If you're not doing what I need, I'm not okay, is my fear. So then how do I be nurturing toward you when my whole reactivity system is going off? And this man got himself to a place in his life where he could manage that in himself.
Yeah, and be both people with, like, to be, I love that he said, like, you know, you, energy, love, empathy, and then was able to put that on pause for him and go, now I'm going to put on this other hat and tell you a thing that might be hard to hear, but I just, you know, I want you to know where it's coming from, and then say the hard thing.
Yeah, my job as a producer, I have to be a producer now. Yeah, 100%. That's adulthood. That's maturity.
That's him saying, this has to happen not because of you, but because of just it, because of reality.
That's right.
Yeah, I got tears.
That's, to me, that's consciousness. That's adulthood. That's maturity. That's, it's not about him. That was such a ninja move. Okay. Another example that I'll just name, we'll see where, I don't even know where I'm going here, but this is relevant, I think, to this topic, is that I have a girlfriend who right this minute in her life is going through a period of, she's finding out again, she's certainly known this before, how sensitive she is. She's having a hard time with medication. She's having a hard time with work. She's just like too sensitive for her life. And when we talk, I go, I so understand this. I built my life around my own sensitivity, which a lot of people, what people try to do generally is toughen up, be not sensitive, so that you can live by the world's terms. Another way you could go is you could have compassion and mercy for yourself and say, how do I make this? How do I honor this more deeply?
How do you do what he did to you, to yourself?
That's exactly my point. And so she and I have been talking and I'll say to her, like, I really get this. And she'll say, you know, if I could change one thing about myself, it would be to change how sensitive I am. So I could just take medications and I could just have this job and I could just... And this morning I was walking the dog. I get a lot of revelations while I'm walking the dog.
That's because your dog's an angel.
She's an angel. Right. Good call. Exactly.
Right?
She's passing these ideas to me. I was like, you know, that idea that she should be more tough and less sensitive, that is the patriarchy. That is misogyny. Like that we have all internalized. And then I was thinking, because she posed a question to me. She said, what if you could change any single thing about yourself, what would it be? And she shared with me, hers was like, I want to be less sensitive. Mine was, I would like my body to not always have to have 10 extra pounds on it. Like no matter what I do, there's always more pounds on the body than I want. And I'm not mad at my body anymore. I'm just like, well, that's unfortunate, but I love me. And I prefer to not have the chub under the arms. Okay. And so I sat with that and I was walking and I was thinking, my God, the one thing I would change about myself, it used to be my sensitivity. It's not now. It's a different patriarchal bullshit, meat fucking misogynistic fucktard thing.
I'm glad you said it. I was like,
yes,
thinking it.
That's the thing. And I love our friendship so much because we do a lot of voice memoing back and forth. She likes it as much as I do. And that's my next voice memo is to be like, oh my God, girl, we both, the main thing each of us wishes we could change is something steeped in the male gaze.
Yeah.
And the male, the toxic masculine perspective of how tough you should be and how fucking skinny you should be.
Right. And how sensitive girls are. Oh God, it's so exhausting. Yeah. Rage fire.
Rage fire. So anyway, those are some thoughts.
I love
cheers.
Those thoughts are in the ethos because I think they're all probably of interest and relevance to our guests today.
I'm Carvel so ready Wallace. For our goddamn fucking guest.
I know. I probably built him up. I'm a big fan and he's also a friend. So that's why. Like, did you read up on him and stuff? Whatever.
I did. What the fuck? We are. Okay. I'm going to say this now so as not to embarrass him. He can hear it later when he listens back to the episode. This might be our most like socially esteemed guest so far, like the world in terms of like the world and what it deems.
Yeah. Acknowledged as a person to be listened to.
Success person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awesome. And he just lives in the apartment upstairs. Let's let Carvel in.
Before we do that, let's talk about what I think is interesting.
No.
Yes. Okay. Sheep hide. Sheep hide is made up of three different parts. All combined, it's called fleece.
Oh, there you go.
It's its own name.
When you take the wool and the hair and the kemp, you get sheep fleece.
What's kemp?
You know what? We'll get into this deeper when someone on the Patreon wants to guest produce, and we'll talk about this for a whole hour.
Yeah, if someone wants to hear more about fleece, you have to get Patreon and then request it.
Oh my God, what a great idea.
All right, Patreon.
Oh my God, thank you, God. Thank you, Desmond, for reminding us. I keep saying to all of us in voice memos, we have to keep mentioning the Patreon page and we forget. I forget every time. And you just did it.
It's because it sounds like patriarchy and we don't want to do it.
But listen, we can't keep doing this podcast and Desmond isn't going to be able to stay sane and not murder both of us in our sleep if we don't get some fucking patronage, guys.
We need some money for our guy.
Patronize us. Be patronizing. Patronize us. We want to feel smaller than you because of your money. And look at those gifts on the Patreon page. We have some cool ass treats and tears.
Apparently you get a tiny pony. Yeah,
oh
Carvel!
My God. It's you. I can't believe it. You're here. What the fuck? How's that for a welcome?
What the fuck?
It was a very loud welcome. I went from complete silence to that. So that was a lot.
We welcomed you in with a shout.
Yeah, welcome to Katie Rubin's voice in your face. I apologize. How are you?
That's not a question. That question doesn't, there's no answering of that question.
Sure there is.
That's not a thing.
I'm so excited to ask you my first question. I can barely hold it inside of my body parts.
That's exciting.
It's right here. It's like in the front of my mouth, ready to just fly on out.
The question is not, how are you?
Apparently we've determined that's not an acceptable question.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, why is that an ungood question? Now I need to know how you are.
It's not that it's an ungood question. It's like, how can anyone explain how they are?
Well, because if you take the time to be real and go like, well, bitch, if you're asking.
I'll fucking tell you.
We're going to spend, I put it this way. We're going to spend the entirety of this session talking about.
Well, we may get into it anyway.
Question. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll ask you a different type of question and maybe it weaves itself into how the hell are you? Also, side note, before I do that, here's another question that we'll say is not the first question.
Okay.
It's another not first question.
Okay.
Is that a frame behind you? Is that a big frame?
I don't know. Actually, this is not, I'm in, is that a frame, Cass?
What
is
no,
that?
No, that's, I can like explain. A, that's like a cover. Okay. He's in the front room, sometimes known as the music room, sometimes known as the meditation room.
Okay.
Also, one of the two studios that we have set up in this house.
Gotcha.
That's a little green screen that's hung up that could drop behind him if you needed it.
It looks like a high-end, like, Renaissance frame.
Oh, yeah.
Like yeah. A beautiful, ornate frame, but I guess
it
not.
Is. Yeah, it's reading totally Renaissance. Is. It's giving Renaissance.
Carvel.
Yes. Katie.
Listen.
I will do just that.
First of all, we're very impressed by you, and we're just going to put it on the table. You're a very impressive human mammal because of all the shit you've done in your life.
Okay.
Deal with yourself. You're an impressive individual. Number two, I have a question. I want to kind of, for the listener, Cassidy, maybe I think you'd be better at this than I am, but can we just like list a little bit of all the amazing accomplishments this man has accomplished so that my question makes more sense for people who might not know?
Carvel's a writer. I mean, he could tell us too if he felt like it. Do you want to do your curriculum vitae?
No.
Carvel is a writer, social commentator, thinker, interviewer.
And he's written where? And he's won what?
Yeah. I don't know if you were nominated for a Peabody. I was nominated for a Peabody.
I didn't win.
God damn it. But you still. My favorite thing that I've consumed of Carvel's is the podcast Finding Fred, which is all about his relationship and other people's relationship to Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, make you weep. It's a, just go listen and cry a lot. That's the way to do that podcast.
Writing in the...
What are you, New Yorker?
New Yorker, New York Times Magazine, GQ Esquire.
I mean, no big deal.
Yeah, cover story, Samuel L. Jackson, mm-hmm. things
like
that.
It's no big deal. It's not a big deal. None of it matters. It's a huge deal. And you're a ninja. I can't believe it. Anyway, it's just so cool to get to interact with writers or any kind of artist who gets to do something at a level like that, where you're having such, or where you have the potential to have such social impact and creative impact and have a voice that's heard by so many people. And just congratulations on everything you've done in your life.
Thank you.
First of all.
Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, good. My pleasure. And my first question was going to be like, what is it that drives you? What motivates you to create all of this content? I could certainly guess, but I would love to hear your language for what that is.
That's a great question. I mean, I think I fell into writing way later in my life. I mean, I went to school for theater. I went to NYU Tisch experimental theater wing. I went to arts high school in LA, so I started off in theater. That's how I first came to understand, you know, storytelling in this particular way. What motivated me to do that? I don't know. I mean, I think I liked being on stage, obviously, and I liked that I was suddenly good at it. Like theater came at a time in my life in which I needed probably some order or some direction, some sense of identity. And I happened to get it from like what I went on stage, and then suddenly I was like, oh, I think I'm actually good at this. And people seem to be like, oh, you're the guy that's good at that. And I was like, yes, that's exactly who I am. Thank you. You know, and like, and so that was, and then, but then as I started to pursue it more like seriously, like, okay, I'm going to do this professionally. I used to say that when I was a kid, the thing I wanted to be was a scientist, which is still my like fallback career, although it's a little late for that, maybe. But when I was in conservatory, I remember having this sort of aha moment in a theater class where I was like, oh, to be an artist, the way I see it is to be a scientist, but of the emotions, of the spirit, of the, right? Like I'm still going to dive down into a place and then find what's down there and sort of like come back and tell you about it so that we can understand better the world we live in. It just happens to be maybe the emotional world, sometimes even the spiritual world. So I feel like that, you know, the question of why a person is motivated to do something is a layered one. This is a thing I find myself asking when I profile people like Sam Jackson or whoever. That is always the driving question for me, is like, why are you like this? And probably in all those conversations, the thing that I've come
to. See, I ask Katie that all the time, but it's from a very different place. Very different.
From straight judgment. Just straight from judgment.
Straight out of my judging soul.
I think that there is a thing that happens where the thing that you're naturally driven to do is a way of interacting with the world. When you're in line with that, there's a certain magnetism to that. And if circumstances align in such a way that you're able to do that and pay rent from it, then you're going to be like, I'm going.
Ding, ding, ding.
But even if you can't pay rent from it, you'll go for a long time. And I remember when I was really switching careers, I had worked in youth nonprofit for like 15 years. I worked in tech for like 5 years. And then I remember when this one writing opportunity came up and it was not going to pay any money at all. A friend of mine who's known me for years said, I was like, oh, I feel bad because this other person is getting this job and they're getting paid so much more. And I'm, you know, I'm getting higher and I'm paying less. And should I like, you know, should I just tell them no, screw you? And she said, well, the thing about you is, you know, you're going to do this anyway, no matter what they pay you. And so you might as well just take the job and just do it. And it was like hearing someone else like who knew me say that about me actually was like someone shines a light. It's like, you know, I was the subject of the profile in that moment. I was like, oh, yeah, that is true. I am going to do this because this is a personal spiritual thing that I have to do. Doesn't mean it's important. It just means I have to do it.
I really relate to that quite deeply. Would it be fair to say that with the writing, it's a soul calling, or you're compelled. You've got to. You just have to.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think I would be doing it under almost any circumstances. It just feels very much like just the way that someone posted a picture of me today on their Instagram because it's my birthday. And
what?
By the way, it's his birthday.
Yeah. What?
Today.
Wait a minute. I'm so honored you're doing this on your birthday.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And, but what I was going to say was the picture that she posted was a picture that I had sent her of when I was little and I had these stuffed animals and I was, at that point, I wanted to be a photographer. So I would set up these party scenes with the stuffed animals and then shoot them from all these different angles, like using little shot glasses and little straws. And
what?
I would, and so the point is like I'm like 8 years old and I'm already like sort of creating scene and trying to like create a narrative and exploring the relationship between two characters.
Yes.
So it's like, I don't, there's not a lot of choice about whether or not I do this. I did have to make a choice to push myself to do this professionally. That was a choice, but like I didn't,
you're doing
I'm wired
it.
This way. Yeah.
You're going to do it. God, I want to date you. I'm kind of kidding, but I'm also just like, you're so appealing. What an appealing individual. And if we can't date, I need you to send me, this is like our first on-air me hitting on a person. Do you think?
I think so.
I'm flattered.
You're welcome. I need you to send me your if you have it, and if I should frame this as a question, but I'm just going to be demanding for a second. Would you be willing to send me your birth date to the minute? Because now I must see your human design chart.
Yeah, I can. I can give it to you right now. I actually know it. But
you don't care if everybody knows it?
No. Give it to me late. Let's text or put it in the chat or something.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Because already I'm going, oh, he probably has this and that and this and that. And I'm very
curious.
Date, time,
and location. Right.
Date, time, location. But time to the minute, like 12:01, you know.
That's fascinating that you said that. 12:01.
Why?
Is it 1201?
Because it's 1201.
A or P?
Are you fucking kidding right
I'm
now?
I'm not fucking kidding you.
Are we gonna date each other?
Sunday,
I think it's on.
It's amazing that you said that. That's really wild.
That is so wild.
Wait a minute. Hold on. There's been like six amazing things already since you've come on here.
That's really something. I'm just taking that in right now.
So am I.
Yeah.
I'm also amazed by, we should just say this, or I want to say this. It's not a should, it's a desire. Like, Cassidy has mentioned to me before that you actually like our podcast.
And that's remarkable.
And like it. No, it's so, I can't, let me put it this way. So who was that yesterday? Oh, a woman messaged me on my website and was like, responding to Cassidy and Mai's argument last episode, she was like, listen, I think this is what you were searching for when you said the thing about Cat. By the way, I listen to everything you say and I love all the things and you're the best. She was like activated and curious and engaged and cared and cares about people and humanity. And that happened because we said words to each other that she listened to that made her light up. It's like that feeling. I used to make solo shows because I had this need to express things in my body and my consciousness that I thought the world needed to hear, right? That's being an artist, something like that. And then when people not only hear it, but they receive it, it activates something in them and they give that back to you. I don't know of another more satisfying cyclical experience. Because it doesn't have like the messy complexity of intimacy, really. And it's not like sex and love. And it doesn't have, it's intimacy on a spiritual, emotional level that doesn't take from you. It only gives that art exchange, I feel like, between people. Anyway, so it was very moving to me. So the fact that you, someone whose work I admire, like what we're doing here, it's very touching and it motivates me. Anybody who messages us and says like, thank you for that, I go, fucking now I can keep going. And I used to think that was like an ego. I need people's... No, this is a giving, and we're receiving by giving also. But when there is something received back, it just closes the loop. It makes the whole thing what it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, I relate to that mostly. I mean, I have a complicated relationship with people who like my stuff because sometimes I feel like they like my stuff because they are seen and see me and we're sharing the human experience of being seen by one another.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
Right.
Other times I feel like sometimes people, I think if the audience gets larger, then people start sneaking into your audience that aren't
like
actually interested in, their status stuff. And then there's like, you become people like you're a comfortable place to project things.
Correct.
For them.
Yeah.
So, which is something that's less of an issue for me these days, but that's one thing I do like about being a writer, which is that I get to be precise with words to whatever extent I can.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned part of my motivation in being precise with words is heading off at the pass all the different screwy ways people can project onto your stuff.
What are some of the things, 100% I know just what you're talking about, but what are some of the things that have been projected onto you, for example?
Well, I think that because the biggest one that comes to mind for me is that I think because I'm a Black writer who writes about race, but also writes about love and kindness and intimacy, that sometimes people like to say, people who are uncomfortable, I'm talking about white people who are uncomfortable with like some of the harsher realities of race, I think they use my work as a kind of status, like, see, everything can be loving and good. There doesn't have to be, you know, like, I'm forgiven. And it's like, you know, or something like that. So I think there's a little bit of that that comes through sometimes in some of these emails I get from people.
So it's like, why can't you all be more kind like Carvel and not angry?
Oh.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of that. Like people wouldn't don't say it that way, but it's just a vibe you pick up that you're a little bit, you know. And so I think that liberation, which is increasingly what I'm writing about and for and towards, I think the thing about liberation is that it requires there is a dismantling, you know. You could call it violence if you want. It's something needs to be undone. And I think that like that undoing is not necessarily incompatible with love and with community and with friendship and family and intimacy. And I think that we collectively as a culture, we're still operating as though these two things are at odds. Either everyone loves one another, or we have to tear things down, which is very bad. And it's like, no, we are tearing things down because we love one another, you know?
That's right.
And I think people are maybe getting there, but I do sometimes get messages from people and I'm like, oh, you missed the point, didn't you? Aw.
That brings me to, I'm actually quite moved right now. That brings me to something that happened recently in a class of mine. Oh, God. Okay, so I had a woman of color. Let me get this correct. A non-monogamous, non-binary gender identification woman, person of color. She had all the things that the white people like myself are like, what's that thing? It's in the middle of all the things. She was like mm-hmm. mixed race, mm-hmm. non-binary, non-monogamous, you know, et cetera. And she left my class. She left. She sent me an email and said, I can't be here anymore. Bye. No explanation, nothing. So I wrote back, hey, I wonder, it's no problem. And I wonder if that if you're leaving, has anything to do with this interaction we had where I had, as a healing coachy teacher person, I frequently wind up asking people quite challenging questions. I'll say, so it seems like this is happening for you. Is that true? And they'll go like, oh my God, I can't believe. And then they cry and then everything changes. And that's the point of healing, is to be like, let's address the thing that's behind the thing so we can be free of it and integrate it and be whole. Her experience was that as a person of color in a class of all white people, it brought up a ton of shame for her to be asked such a biting direct question in a group of white people, because she felt like, I cannot say this in front of these white people. And the thing she wanted to say didn't even have to do with race. It was just a feeling for her of, I can't get, what? You don't get to ask me that in this room full of white people. And then, so she articulated that back to me in an email, which I appreciated a lot. And I wrote back and said like, wow, okay, fuck. It never would have occurred to me that answering a question that was not about race would feel, it was about her romantic life, that would trigger something about race. That wasn't in my frame. And it just did for her. It just did. So, okay. For me as a person who deals with people's triggers all the time, I said, you know, just us having this conversation right now is teaching me something I didn't know. And I said, would you be willing to come back to class so I can publicly own where I was ignorant, and we can try to work this out in the space so that everyone there learns a thing that we can only learn through you? And I said, of course, you're not obligated, and it's not, but would you leaving kind of like, you don't get to take me to task. I don't get to publicly own having been clueless about a thing. And I don't get to support you through this trigger, which as a healer, I actually know how to do. So she said no and didn't come back.
Right.
And that's understandable.
I would have also said no, actually.
Okay. I want to hear why. And the end of the story is simply that currently I have a different class going with a different person of color with whom I'm having an incredibly different experience, because this person, for whatever reason in their life, is willing, ready, able to just put it all on the fucking table. It is good. So it's, I don't want to say, it's not confusing. It's more just, I feel sad that first person didn't feel like they could try to get their own needs met because the context felt so unsafe. And I feel sad that they didn't feel like they could trust me to make a safe context. And I understand, but yes, please.
Well, they did get their own needs met. They just didn't do it in your space. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fair.
And I mean, they did, what they did was like a dope ass courageous thing, from what I can tell. It's just that they were like, oh, I thought I thought I could do this. It turns out I can't. I'm going to pull the plug on this, which is going to be awkward and uncomfortable and perhaps may put people in their feelings, may put me in my feelings, but I'm actually going to go ahead and make that move because that's where I'm at. And of course, people are going to deal with stuff differently because I don't, you know, I've always felt this way, but the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm not really here to judge how anyone navigates their way through these systems of oppression. I mean, some people are just like, yeah, I'm going to show up and fight every day. And some people are like, yeah, I'm going to be sleeping and eating Funyuns for 7 hours. That's my plan. And screw you if you don't like it. And I'm just like, hey, do you, because we're all out here struggling. And you know, and I think that it's not that for this person, I'm guessing, you know, without talking to them, but just having, you know, I relate to that experience. I went to a theater program, which was, you know, super, you got all emotional and everyone was like rolling around on the floor and crying about their childhood and what have you. And yeah, there were times that program was overwhelmingly white, you know, it's NYU, it's this expensive school. And there were times when I was in that space and I felt like, gee, am I safe here? And it wasn't like there was anyone around there who was just like bad or hated me, but you're just like, I don't know if I really want to go there in front of all these people right now. I think that's legit to feel like you don't want to do that. I would imagine that probably a person who identifies as a woman and has the lived experience of being a woman, there might be some forms of intimacy you wouldn't want to take in a room full of guys. You just might not want to go there in that moment. You might just be like, you know, nothing against the guys, but just, no. I'm not here, not now. And so I understand how a person can be like, not that they didn't get their needs met, but that the way to meet the need was to decline to go deeper in that space. And I don't know that that's necessarily about race. I mean, it is in kind of like the general sense, but it's really just about, you know, to unpack yourself publicly is a vulnerable and frightening thing, period. And
for some people, I guess I'm pretty not afraid of it, but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's
very different.
I think it's a vulnerable thing for a lot of people. I think that, I mean, I think even hearing you tell this story of this is you unpacking something that is like hard, you know, like, and so this is your space. You own this space and you get to do this. But like, there are other, you know, I watch people do this all day on Twitter, trying to unpack something. And then people come with like 150,000 uncharitable readings and then they have to lock their account and then they end up on a website. And then people are just piling on from all over the place. And that is a violent experience. And so
for sure,
it makes sense to me that like people are rightfully picking and choosing the communities in which we unpack our trauma. I think that it's important to unpack our trauma, but I also think that we don't have to do it in all spaces at all times.
No, and thank you. And there's no part of me that was like, you should now get your shit. I was just sad that she was leaving because I was like, boy, this is good right here. What's happening? Can we do this together? But that's just me.
Yeah, well, one cool thing is actually you could also be like, and you still get to do this. You also get to be happy for them that they were leaving because they were taking care of themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
And they consciously, honestly, and directly took control of their safety and like made a decision. I think it's kind of a beautiful thing, actually.
Well, this kind of thing happens all the time in my field. Like people, I'm either teaching people how to do that or I'm witnessing them do it. Self-care and self-honoring is kind of the whole game. So I don't feel like that just is, yeah, that's all good. There was just, I saw this opportunity for more healing.
Well, what's interesting about that, yeah, that reminds me of the other thing I was going to say, which is that this is an opportunity, like you, the full opportunity for growth and learning is happening for you as a result of this.
Yeah.
It's just not happening in the particular milieu that you wanted it to happen in.
No, that's clear.
Which is in front of the class, but clearly this has set you on a path of investigation.
Oh, yeah.
That you get to continue to work your way through and more will be revealed and more information will come that allows you.
And it has been. It's been trickling in and it shows up in different ways. And I regularly have the impulse to message her and be like, so I learned this new thing and it's all about that thing that happened with you and me, but I don't.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah. But I'm just saying the impulse arises.
Totally.
But what I mean by more, like I was going to learn from it forever, no matter which shape it took.
Yeah.
But the class, that's like 8 white people that won't get to witness me being, I'm more willing than probably those other people in that class because of having been pummeled by my own I'm just that way, to own things and make mistakes and be wrong and say things out loud and go like, fuck, and then go, my bad, and then correct the behavior and then acknowledge the correction. And to watch that would teach them. Now, of course, it's not the person who left's job. And this is another piece that we're all navigating in this awakening time that some of us are in the middle of, is that it's nobody's job to help us wake up to what we need to fucking wake up to. And boy, that would have been a potent series of moments for a lot of people.
Well, the good news for them is that there'll be plenty of moments like that available to them, and there probably already have been, like, because this will continue.
To the rest of the class, you mean?
Yeah, the rest of the class, yeah. Because this is, it's, our whole moment is made up of moments like this. And it's just a matter of when do people want to get on board. It reminds me, it's like a stream that's flowing down river, and like, you're just kind of on the banks. It's like, you're going to get in the water at some point. It's like, when are you going to get in? You're going to here, you're going to hike down another mile and get in, but you're eventually going to get in the water. So, and to that point, like that learning opportunity for learning should come, because we talked about like the beginning, how people have different responses to this. Some people are ready to do that labor. You know, I do a certain amount of that, like of explaining stuff publicly. And so the opportunity for the people in the class should come at the hands of someone who's, it's their time to do it. They're ready to do it.
Right. I believe in divine timing as well. I mean, I would call that divine timing, or you could say universal timing. It's not up to me. I'm just expressing the emotions I had the fact that the person left, because there was some loss there, and that's okay. It's all okay. It's all great. I mean, it's all what it is. And I'm also, just to say publicly to your point, how many moments there are when I'm walking down the street or I'm interacting with someone or something has just happened and I go, oh, that's what she meant in the third line of the sixth paragraph of that fucking letter she sent me. That's what she meant. I didn't even fucking know that thing. And it'll hit me and I'll go, got it. Okay, fucking shit. Got it. And so she did me a ton of huge favors with like responding when I said, so why are you leaving for real though? But tell me for real. And she fucking told me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the right there. That was the big generous offer, just to tell you the fucking truth.
It was big. It was a big generous offer.
That's a thing that I like to remember, like when people, like that's a thing to tell people in general around anything that has to do with like any forms of oppression, when people are called out for forms of oppression, like in any way, versions of it, levels of it. But the idea that like, do you understand that that is not an attack, but a fucking act of love? That somebody stopped and said, hey, look at this behavior. Look at this thing you're doing that you probably don't want to be doing. And it's hurting people, you know, at all levels, you know, tiny little things and big things. But that's an act of love to call you out, because it, like, it takes courage. It takes generosity. They could just peace out and walk the fuck away. But when someone actually says to you, hey, this thing, maybe don't do that. That's for me, like it helps me to treat those as generous acts of love instead of acts of criticism or acts of rejection or attack.
Personal attack or judgment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a friendship, actually. I mean, I had a friend, this happened actually end of last year. I had a friend who's also a writer, long story. I ended up doing something that they felt hurt by. Like, she felt like it took her a while to find the words, but she felt like it was dismissive and unfair. And like, and she had felt the type of way. And she wrote me this email that was like, yeah, I'm actually feeling a kind of way about this, and here's why. And I, you know, I thought about not saying anything, but I don't think our relationship could continue if I didn't say anything. And I just, and I was like, yeah, I think of it that way. Like, that wasn't, you know, we'd never had a conflict before. We've known, you know, it's been all love. And so, whatever, for my own feelings of like, oh my God, I'm so bad. I feel terrible. I have a stomachache now for 2 days because I harmed someone. Whatever for that, what I really take from that is that, wow, this person said, I would like to continue a relationship with you, and I can't unless we address this thing. And I actually trust that you can do something useful with this information.
Right. That's intimacy, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's everything I've been taught about how you make any relationship work, is you've got to be willing to go like, I can't be silent about this thing and connect with you anymore, you know? And then there has to be safety for that.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you just got to be like, you know what?
Bye.
No comment. Wishing you the best of luck on all your future endeavors.
For sure. And this brings me to, it may seem unrelated, but it brings me to, I'm wondering what your sort of ideas or practices or anythings are around spirituality. Like, what does spirituality mean to you?
Well, this is an ever-evolving thing for me. My spirituality is definitely the universe has a wisdom, and like my job is to learn of it and understand it and let it work, or not interfere with it, rather, or not harm myself and others by trying to interfere with it is a more accurate way. Because I'm not going to, you know, as they say, you cannot go to the ocean and make the wave stop.
Mm-hmm.
But you could certainly drown if you try.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, I've always felt like I went through like a pretty significant Buddhist phase when I was in my 20s. And I remember reading the Tao Te Ching in like my early 30s and being like, wait, this is what I've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
And right now my spiritual practice involves certainly like presence and patience to hear what is being spoken through experience, through people, through the universe. I try to remain connected to the ancestry for me. That includes my mother, who passed in 2008. And I do some family history stuff where I think about my mother's mother and great mother, great grandmothers and great great grandmothers and great great grandmothers. And I'm still learning how to exist within those, within that lineage. Like, what actually do I do with the ancestry, or what do they do with me? And I feel like each day there's an evolution around that. I do have a meditation practice that doesn't to me feel spiritual as much as literally just, it's like drinking water, you know, it's like you just do it so that you don't collapse. I understand that meditation can feel like a spiritual thing, but mostly I do it so that I don't collapse. I spend a lot of time dealing with dreams because I do think that dreams are a way of navigating insight and intuition. And so I feel like if I have a working relationship with my dreams, then that translates to me having a working relationship with my intuition. So I don't know. I'm sure that stuff sounds woo-woo and spiritual, but the more I do this stuff, the less it feels like anything other than just regularly navigating the world as we know it. It's just that my understanding of the world has expanded over the years to include things that aren't readily visible to the naked eye right away.
Well, I mean, I think that is spirituality is.
What spirituality is, yeah.
Yeah, having a relationship with that which is ineffable or not readily available to the 3D eye.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, yeah, but like the stock market is not readily available to the 3D eye and people still have a relationship with that. So like on some level, I always wonder about what is the arbitrary definition between what is real and what is imaginary, because the stock market is imaginary, but no one calls that spirit.
Well, okay, fair enough. But I could respond to that by saying, I mean, I could tell you some technical spiritual shit that's like, well, here, I'll give you one framing of it just as a way to talk about it, because of course it all depends on which lens you're looking through with these conversations. But one lens is that, so I was taught in the first healing school I went to that the imaginal realm, so we have the 3D realm here at the center, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. a step out from there is the imaginal realm where we're like imagining stuff and I can make things up with my mind and I can, but I'm kind of pulling from it, but I'm also contributing to it. Like I get ideas that come to me from the imaginal, but I also can create ideas that go into the imaginal. Right behind the imaginal realm is where you enter into the subtler realms of consciousness.
Oh, yes.
That we would call the spirit realms, such that like 3D imaginal spirit and then deeper, deeper, deeper spirit, that's sort of the progression of it. So if you ask me like, where does the stock market fall in that? I would say it's actually, I think you're right on it in that it's right in the imaginal realm, in the sense that like men created the idea, human mammals created the idea of like numbers matter and you trade and you don't. So we imagine it into being.
Yeah. And everyone shares in the grand, I hear that, yeah.
In the grand illusion.
Right.
In the illusion, yeah.
Right, in the same way that you go watch a Hobbit movie and you go, we all agree that the forest is there and the hobbits are walking. Yeah.
I saw a quote that was like, come on everybody, the fucking economy is made up. Can you just fucking help people eat?
It's so good. It's so good.
It's like, it's a made up thing. Stop talking about the economy. It's completely made up. Just feed people.
Hand some chicken to that guy.
Yeah, just fucking
it's
feed
simple.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
I was in, that reminds me of being in India, just being like, oh, fuck. Like every idea I had about, I mean, I don't know, it burst some bubble around poverty that I, some weird ideas I had about poverty being raised as a upper class white child in Miami, Florida, with a lot of rich Jews around me. You know, we all, it doesn't matter. But I was in India, walking around in India. Mumbai in particular is such a city of economic, socioeconomic diversity. In 1 millimeter of space, you'll have somebody taking a literal shit in front of you into a pot on the street, because that's where they live, is on that street corner. And they're making you a chai while they take a shit next to a fucking mansion, next to a hovel, next to a mosque, next to a Jainist temple, next to another guy taking a shit. Such that, like, there's this Aquarian idea I've had a long time. I have this show that I secretly always have wanted to write, and I never have the right material for the title. Like, I have a title and I know the kind of piece it wants to be, but I don't have the show yet. So I'm always waiting for something I'm writing to fit the mold of this title and the concept that comes through it, which is, I have a show that I want to write called Everything All at Once. And I want the show to, its only aim would be, I have this image that comes to me sometimes when I go to sleep, where it's a sphere. And I will relate this back to Mumbai in a second and back to what we were just saying. It's a sphere that's floating in the air, and it has in it everything in 3D reality. It has a bookshelf and a dead man and a bucket and a fish and wisdom and feces. It has everything there, like dogs and puppies. It's all there in this ball, right? And then the ball changes, instantaneously changes into a perfectly smooth, round marble that is like peach and white for some reason. And I sat with this image so long, speaking of dreams and their power and images and their power, like it would come to me and come to me. And I finally understood it was showing me the oneness of everything. It was about oneness and how that which we experience as disparate objects and separation between one another is always unified in the realm of unity. And coming back to like this idea of, well, here we are in 3D, and then there's the imaginal, and then there's the this and then that and then that. When you go way back here, to subtler and subtler realms of consciousness, you get to what in the Sufi lineage they call the unity, where I happen to have been blessed to have the experience of having been taken to the unity a time once. And it was, there's no words, remarkable. Having tasted that through the cells of my being, it solved the riddle of what the everything all at once ball was trying to show me by turning into a marble ball. So anyway, being in Mumbai is like being with that first ball, where everything is there. And because the chaos of everything is in every single moment of time, I found it impossible to be taken much closer to the realms of unity when I was in Mumbai. Every moment is like oneness, 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 because there's not a single thing that isn't in front of your eyes. All of it is there. And then you're confronted with, there's no separation. That rich guy is standing right next to the guy shitting in the bucket, and the shitting in the bucket guy is smiling. He's fine. The rich guy looks miserable. All of life. Is this making any sense?
Mm-hmm. Actually, weirdly enough, yes, it is. And, or at least what I get from it is, I mean, I do think that it's interesting that you describe this unity ball as having two modes of being, one mode in which everything is in it, is in one thing, and a second mode in which everything is one thing, which is slightly different. Yeah. And I relate to those too. I mean, without going into length about my own weird, trippy experiences I've had, yes, I've had unity moments.
We want you to go into at length your weird, trippy.
I've had unity moments a handful of times in my life. But I do really like this distinction of what it means to be present with everything and feel it as everything, and what it means to be present with everything and feel it as one thing.
I love that.
Those are different things. And I think that there's a lot there.
Yep.
And I relate to that. And I think that's right, actually. I mean, I don't know if it's right, but I think that's right.
Well, what's one experience you've had, trippy, unity, oneness?
Well, the first time I did, well, not, this wasn't the first time, but early in my acid doing days, which are thankfully over, most of the time I did acid, I just had like, you know, just like kind of trippy experiences, like, whoa. But there was one time in which I had an experience that was like, you know, I was listening to Jimi Hendrix. I'm in my bed, and then this is this quiet song. I was really obsessed with Jimi Hendrix in high school and college. And so there's this long trippy song in which Electric Ladyland, 1983, and Merman Ash Return to Be, where he sings a song about the world is falling apart and he decides to go live under the sea. And so he lives under the sea and then it's like he's in Atlantis. And then that's what he describes in the lyrics and the guitar solo and everything. And then for like 12 minutes, there's just like ambient undersea sounds. So here I am lying in bed listening to ambient undersea sounds and I guess falling asleep. Because then the next song after that is this very loud reprise of a blues jam that came earlier in the album that begins with a sudden, like, loud guitar sting and then is off and running. And I was lying in bed listening to this, like, underwater sea sound and I guess drifting off and just having memories of, like, life and, you know, whatever. And then I had this moment where I've never described this publicly before. This is crazy that I'm doing this. But I had this moment where in an instant, I suddenly remembered everything that I had ever seen. It's like the only way I can say it. It's like, and but it was not all at once. It was linear in time, but very quick. It was like, it was like that. It was like everything I'd ever seen. Some of it was media, but a lot of it was just stuff from my real life. Just like a huge thing. And I was like, and just as that was happening, it was like, it started off as slow memories and then they sped up into this sudden pace. And then, I mean, like the nearest comp I can think of is like, We didn't start the fire video, you know, right? So like it was kind of like that, but like we didn't start the fire, but of my life, and then everything kind of came together, exploded. I remember very vividly seeing trails fall from the sky the way it happens after fireworks, where you see the little trailers, and then there was nothing except for occasional dots of light that were still falling, and then I saw a word in the nothingness, and the word was it, and I understood exactly what it meant in that moment. I was like, oh, yes, of course, like, of course. And then this is so stupid, but again, there was, at that moment, when I realized that I understood it, there was a cosmic wink, like an actual wink, like, yep, that's it. And I was like, and then I woke up and the music had started. And I, for a second, I just sat there and was like, oh, that's, I saw it. I saw it. And I don't know what it means. I mean, I do know what it means, but I don't even ever bother to talk about what it means. I don't think I'll ever write about it. I think this is probably the most I'll, you know, maybe in my deathbed, I'll like come back and be like, this is my final act as I'm finally going to put this into writing. But for now, it doesn't feel like it needs to be spoken. It already is. It doesn't even need me to do anything. This thing is already there. And I just happened to see it in this moment. And it wasn't a new thing that was revealed to me. It was a confirmation of something I had already known, but it was like, you know, that thing you suspected. It reminds me of that Steve Martin joke, like, what if you went to heaven and it really was just angels with harps? And you'd be like, come on, really?
Yeah, totally.
You know, it was a little bit like that. It's a little on the nose. That's what it felt. It was like, this is what this is what you've known for as long as you can remember about the nature of things. But here is this confirmation. Now, whether or not that, like, the cynic in me, because I definitely have to feed the cynic. It's very important for my job and for my mental health. The cynic in me goes, well, no, duh, that you were obviously revealed something that you already knew because it was your imagination. You made it up. That's what you already thought. You just saw it in this cool way because of acid. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's fine. But I still think it's right. I still think it is it. It is what it is. That is it. That's the end of it. There's nothing more than that. Everything is one. It's all one. Everyone's been trying to say that my whole life. Like that's what all, I mean, even Parliament was like, everything is on the one. Like it's on, like, we, this is something that is not, you know, it's not like esoteric knowledge. It's just a matter of, are you able to be in line with that truth? And that's goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, that for me, the spiritual practice is not a realizing or understanding of anything. It's a question of alignment. Can I be in alignment with what is already true? The truth doesn't need me to validate it. I just need to get out of the fucking way of like resisting it.
For sure. I agree. That's the whole jam. I just had three like profound experiences while you were describing that. One is, they're all going to sound trite, but in my body, they were very resonant. I'll try to make them match the energy I experienced when you said the words, but I'll probably fail. One was... when you describe the light part falling, like after the, what are these called?
Explosion, yes. Fireworks.
It reminds me of, before you said that part, I was thinking, oh, he witnessed a glitch in the Matrix. And then you said that, and I went, They did that in that movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did do that in that movie. Yeah. I forgot about that.
When they were glitching in the Matrix, the little trickles would come down. And I was like, he did witness a glitch in the Matrix.
And this was pre-Matrix, I have to say. This was 1992.
I'm sure it was, because I believe the Matrix dudes just have seen through the veils, and they're just telling a story about the veils they've seen through. It's not very... People are like, what a beautiful metaphor. And I'm like, no, that's happening. It's happening all the time. But anyway, so that blew me away. And then also, okay, this is going to be hard. Oh, God. Okay, when I was in second grade, there was a kid. Why am I crying six times already in this fucking conversation? There was a lovely young boy. I'm not going to say his name, but there was a kid in my second grade class who I fell in love with, and he fell in love with me in second grade. We like, the hearts just went, pow. And then I had a dream in second grade. Second grade. How old are you? Eight? Six? Something like that? Okay.
Split the difference.
I went home, and I had a dream that he basically sort of propositioned me sexually in the dream. He did some kind of like, he said like a second grade version of, do you want to have sex? And it was like very second grade, very G-rated. But I knew what it meant in the dream. I felt so threatened and attacked by the dream, by his action in the dream, that when I woke up in the morning, I went back to school and I ousted him. I got everyone in our whole grade. This is a terrible story, but it relates to the thing you just said. I got everyone in our whole grade in, we were in something called after school care, where we'd all go after school when we had parents who didn't come get us. And I got everyone in that program to call him it. We ousted him together under my leadership. And I wanted everyone to call him it. And it was, when I look back at the experience, I understand it very intimately now. I've had to do years of work to understand what the hell was going on there. But I had had some sexual abuse trauma before second grade that his, in my psyche, his crossing of that boundary made me feel so unsafe that I had to do my defensive pattern, which is attack and make him feel small, to feel strong again, to feel safe. But I must have ousted him for probably 6 months. The poor kid was tortured. One day we were in after school care and the counselors came up and they made me sit at the table with this poor kid. And they said, Katie, look at him right now. See how he's crying? You're doing that. You did that. You understand that when you call him it, it makes him cry. You're breaking his heart every day. And some veil was lifted and I stopped doing it. I had some resentment about it. I was begrudging about it. I remember thinking like, fuck you guys, but okay, fine. I won't do it anymore. But there was this tiny moment inside of being called out like that where every veil of consciousness lifted and I went, we're all one. I'm breaking my own heart. And then the veil slammed shut again, like the window opened and then slammed shut. And then I just went, fuck you. Okay, fine. But I was in second grade and that veil was removed. And but the irony or the depth of it sort of feels profound to me that I called him it. And the universe for me was pointing to it through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I called him it. And then the veils parted and I saw it, which was the unity, the oneness of all things. And then we went about our lives and I sort of did a semi-okay job of not killing this kid spiritually. But anyway, there you are describing it as it. I was like, what word is he going to say? What word is he going to say? And then he said it, and it freaked me out a little bit.
That's amazing to me. Also, because I remember even at the time being a little disappointed that it was the word. It's like not a particular, the writer in me is like, that's not a great word. That's, what is that word?
It should
word?
Have been like, and.
Yeah, or like one. Something. Yeah, something like, you know, just like fluid, like something just beautiful, but it is just kind of like utilitarian, but it is what it is.
It sort of lands.
Yeah, you know.
I just want to interrupt real quick because I definitely want to suggest that if we do, I think we probably want to go on the records today, but we should probably move towards that if we are going to.
Yeah. Do you want to do that, Carvel?
Yeah, I'll give that a shot.
That Boy, sound? That's uninviting.
How does that sound?
Not fun in any way.
Are you interested?
Yeah, I am. I'm interested. I mean, I'm curious. I'm like, I want to see what this is about. That's how I feel about it.
In what sense? What do you mean by that?
Well, I've been thinking a lot. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, I want to see what the records have for me.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's different than how I was hearing it. Sometimes when people say that, which is why I was asking, like, help me understand what you mean. They're coming at it. Sorry, my microphone does not want to. They're coming at it like so cynically that the whole endeavor is with like sort of arms crossed.
Oh, I see.
Kind
oh,
of no, prove to me that this isn't bullshit. And
oh,
when
no,
people
no.
come at it like that, I have a hard time reading them.
Oh, no, no, no.
Because they're
that.
Closed. And if your heart is closed and you're saying like, okay, wizard, witch, prove this. I'm just like, no, no, I won't. Thanks. No,
no, I don't have that. No, I mean, okay. I have like, yeah, no, I don't. That's all. That's in fact, I've already said all I need to say about it. I have a willingness and an interest and I'm ready for it. And I've been thinking about what I want to know.
Fun. Okay. Well, I love that. Okay. Then let me just grab from you, if I may, your full legal name. I'm going to write it down. I'm going to sell it to the highest bidder.
Okay, so my first... Oh, but I do have a question about that I'll tell you after I tell you. So the first, it's Carvell, C-A-R-V-E-L-L.
Yeah.
The middle name is Omega, O-M-E-G-A.
Are you serious? Wow.
And the last name is Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E. And I am the second in that lineage. So I'm Carvel Omega Wallace the second.
Your fucking middle name is Omega? That's like so spiritual. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
Are you Carvel Omega Wallace the second, as in the previous Carvel was also Carvel Omega Wallace?
Yeah. Yes.
Who chose Omega?
Well, my mother did, and my mother's family has a lot of Greek names in the mix. Probably having to do with their participation in the Masons and the Order of the Eastern Star would be my guess.
What?
We need to schedule a second episode.
What the fuck?
I don't know that much about it at this point, but I know that. I know that participation existed, and I know that that's where several of the names in my family come from.
You gotta look into the fucking Masons.
It's interesting shit.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gah. If you're not an Aquarius or a Scorpio, then I have to jump off a building.
Oh, no.
What's your sun sign?
I don't want you to jump off a building. Well, I'm a Libra. Today's my birthday.
Okay. And right. And then what's your moon and rising? Do you know?
Capricorn moon, Sagittarius rising.
Sag. Okay. Sag rising and Libra. Well, that makes sense. I should have thrown Libra in there. God, I'm going to put money on the table that somewhere in your chart, there's a strong Aquarian placement.
I don't know if there is, actually. I don't remember. I know that my chart is like super Libra heavy. Like there's billions of Libra in my chart. It's like five placements in Libra.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I want to find out if there's any Aquarius.
So the question I had is, why do you need the full legal name? Because every time I hear that, I always think, but this is not, I mean, this name is just the name that the government gave me. Like, I don't, you know.
I know.
That's why Black people call this your government name. It's not your real name. It's like the government's name.
I know.
So how does that name, tell me about that.
That's how I was trained. They train you to go by the full legal name. I actually don't have too much information about why, but I will tell you this. Sometimes when people have been real like, I don't go by that name. My actual spirit name is Jamiroquai. Mm-hmm. And I try to read the records of Jamiroquai. It doesn't fucking happen.
I'm going to skip, just for the sake of time, I'm going to skip every joke that came to me about reading the records of Jamiroquai.
Go ahead. Move on. I really want you to do those jokes.
Did you mix them
okay.
and scratch them a little bit?
I went down a Jamiroquai rabbit hole. I go down rabbit holes. I'm very obsessive compulsive. So I go down information rabbit holes, which is how I know most of what I know about the world. And I went down a Jamiroquai rabbit hole like a year ago where I just started being like, who was this guy? Like what? And then what are they doing now? And I found footage of them performing, like, you know, this is before pandemic, and that, yeah, they're doing the same thing. Everyone looks very old. He looks like a dad who's on his way to pick up, you know, he looks like a Brooklyn dad who's on his way to pick up his like
hipster kid,
5-year-old from his second marriage from kindergarten. But
just
there
wearing
he is
those weird horns.
Was still wearing horns. Not moving around as much. I'm just like, what was that? Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. Well, yeah. I want to know what it, they had that, they were one hit wonder, right?
Virtual Insanity.
They had a few, no, they were around. They had a few things going on.
They had a few.
Yeah, someone else pointed out, Sarah Hagee, I believe it was, the Canadian writer, pointed out that everything he predicted in Virtual Insanity has come to pass.
Oh, now I'm going to have to go read those lyrics.
Me too. So, futures
just putting
made
it out there.
Of Virtual Insanity now, always, what does it seem to?
I think he predicted bit it did it.
Ah, I wasn't sure about but if he is, Who am I to challenge? Okay. Oh my God. Here. Okay. All right. We'll close our eyes for just a moment. Cass, will you do your genius thing you always do of letting me know when it's time is happening?
I mean, let's make a call. Let's just decide. We are going over today quite a bit, but I'd say we should probably not go too much later than like 11. Let's not go later than 11:50. So it's 11:23 right now. That gives us like 25 minutes. Is that enough?
Carvel, are you good with that timing?
That works for me.
That's great.
All right. So I'll give you a holler at 11:45.
Sweet. 11:12:1:2:45. Got it. Okay. Math. East Coast. What? All right, Carvel, when you're ready, just join me for just a brief moment in the eye closings. And we'll breathe into the low belly a few deep breaths. Breath is important as it helps me connect into your field. The more in touch you are with yourself, the more in touch I can be with you. The breath being that which creates a nice strong connection with self. Yeah, and we'll feel our feet on the ground as we continue to breathe into the low belly. And we'll see the little spinning foot chakras at the bottom center of each foot just spinning wide, like a tornado of light expanding left and right, expanding wider and wider. Just as an idea, as an image, as an energy in the imaginal realm, actually. Yeah, and as those foot chakras spin open, we'll just acknowledge that they create a nice window of opening between the electromagnetic field of the earth and the electromagnetic field of the body. By creating those openings, we connect those two fields of energy more consciously, more directly than they already organically are connected. And we'll imagine now extending from your body our 500 energetic roots of light that shoot through the open window of your left foot down into the earth, hundreds of miles down and in. And 500 energetic roots of light shoot through the open window of your right foot, hundreds of miles down and in. Next, we'll see a nice, strong, wide, foot and a half wide grounding cord extend from the base of the spine. Big, wide grounding cord shooting to the center of the earth. It is also made of consciousness, made of light. And we'll just allow, imagine, visualize a river of light from the earth herself flowing up through that grounding cord into your root or the base of your spine. And flooding forward into each hip socket, into the quads and glutes and hamstrings, down through the knees and calves and shins and ankles and feet, and down into the roots we created moments ago. We'll just acknowledge that this tripod grounding structure of light allows for a softening through the midline of your body, from the base of you up through the center of you, through the heart and the throat and the head and the crown. The whole thing just takes one step wider, a little bit more open, a little bit softer. And from here, we do acknowledge the forces of light and the forces of my creaky chair, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Amen. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know. Oh, I already forgot. Carvel Omega Wallace II. Triple checking that. There it is. In the light of the Akashic records, help me to see Carvel Omega Wallace II through the eyes of the Lords of the Records, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Carvel Omega Wallace II have for Carvel Omega Wallace II. Okay, I'm just going to ask the record keepers of Carvel to deepen me into his records and deepen him into his connection with his records. The records just being energetic bits of consciousness and awareness that live or reside in a high vibrational, maybe you could argue the highest vibrational realm of consciousness from which all other things emerge. Could call that the seat of the soul, the seat of God. Heart of the light of the center of consciousness, the black womb of no thing, Allah. Wow. So I'm just going to share just the first impulses, the first bits of awareness, and then I'll go to your question. It's interesting because what I get first and foremost is I have a lot I can learn from you because of all of your Libra. My North Node is in Libra. Like my whole growth path is toward being more Libran, and I've had such resistance to Libras up until about 5 years ago. Like, probably hated them. Hate and shut down and not open. And then there was an awareness, an awakening, and an understanding of the value of the Libra energy that came through a number of traumas in a row that made a lot of sense at the end. And your energy, everything you say, opens a doorway of seeing that I can't see unless the doorway of you is present opening it. And so they're just acknowledging that for me to understand a concept that they give me a lot when I'm channeling for people in class and with private clients, which is this one, that the emotions, which Libras are quite facile with, and if not facile, Libras are Libras deal with emotions a lot more directly, regularly, constantly than most other people, because you can't help it, because they're just not going anywhere and you guys are tapped in pretty directly to them, that the emotions are the midway point between the spirit and the body. And so without connection to the emotional realm, that which the spirit is trying to give the body can't have the same level of richness, human three-dimensional richness, depth, meaning, as it can when the emotions are integrated into the spiritual process. And there's a way that, yeah, my field has to take only so much of that in one given moment because the emotions are just so intense for the nervous system. Okay. So, all right. Anything for him? No. Okay. That was just for my awareness. Thank you for bearing with me. What would you like to ask?
Okay. So I'm at this point where I just finished a book, a memoir. And the question isn't about that, but it's just about what this phase of my life symbolizes personally. Mm. So in that book, I write in this kind of chaotic way. It's like, listen, whatever comes out is going to come out. And then later we're going to figure out what it all means. And then we're going to write the text that like organizes it. And so I would say that right now I have this kind of bloody pulpy mess out in the world being read by people, my editors, whatever. You know, there's still some connective tissue that needs to be written to make it all make sense. But I believe in the project in the end. But in the project, what ended up happening, which is not what I intended to do necessarily, is that I begin, to examine, you know, I write towards liberation, that I know, but what ended up happening in the book is that I write towards liberation through the examination of interpersonal relationships, particularly romantic relationships, particularly relationships between cis men and women.
Uh-huh.
And so I write a lot about my own, because those are the only relationships that I know of for sure, which is the ones that I've been in.
Uh-huh.
And the way that I've written about them is very revealing, personally revealing. I admit, like, ways in which I've harmed people. I talk about what those harms meant, where they came from. As far as I can tell, I talk about the ways those harms are tied into larger systems. I talk about love, the act of love, and all of its nuances and details and sort of crevices. And, you know, that's kind of like my area, I guess, it's turning into. I don't necessarily like that, but it is what it is. I'm not going to brand myself as the love bro. Me and my partner were joking about that, but I'm turning into someone who sees love and the act of love and the process and study and practice of love as like a way to examine and deal with a lot of social and systemic stuff.
Really, and I think quick. You know that that's the most Libra thing you could ever say, right?
Yeah, yeah, I know. I told you I'm a quintuple Libra.
And yeah, so, just saying.
And I understand. And I understand that people, and part of it has to do with, like, we understand love only as this soft thing. We don't understand it as a thing that has to do with, like, that we fight for love. We fight because of love. We protect people because of love. Whatever. That's not the point. I'm not going to relitigate the book here. The point is that in my work, I feel pretty confident about what's happening in the book, but I'm also aware that in doing this work, I have made the decision to expose myself publicly in all these different ways. And as I was saying at the beginning, that, you know, it's not an entirely safe space. I have my own anxieties about being perceived. I don't like to be perceived in general. You know, and if there was some way I could do the work of exploring these things without being perceived, I probably would like to take that, but it's too late now. I've sort of put my name on everything. And so I guess my question is, am I safe in doing this? Is this the right path? Am I following? It feels to me like I'm following the drive that, you know, that I've been given for whatever my limited time on this particular plane is. But I would like some confirmation or information, or I'd also like to know, what is it that I need to know if I am going to pursue this path? Like, what is it that I need to be told? Hmm. What do I need to remember?
Mm-hmm. So when you ask, am I safe? No, definitely not. And then when you ask, am I on the right path? Yes, definitely. And so when did you get the idea that to be on the right path had anything to do with safety? And so you will navigate some uncomfortable moments. You will navigate, as you said earlier, some difficult projections. You will activate in people all kinds of reactions. You will not feel safe, but you are safe. You won't be harmed physically. You won't die from this undertaking. You'll just be visible, naked in the street. And that does not feel safe. So emotionally, is it safe? Not really. Is it the right thing? Absolutely. Why? Because you can, and you have. And each of us has our task or tasks. No one can do what you can do the way you do it. And here you are, having done it. Also, remember, you were brought to this moment. You were brought, this was all, it all was brought to you. It all coalesced, right? There were ways that you made it happen, quote, quote, and ways that you really didn't. And that is the definition of aligning one's will with the universal flow. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Thoughts, questions about any of that?
No. I don't have thoughts or questions about that. I do want to, I think also it's increasingly occurring to me that like I want to be aligned with ancestry and continue to like work in conversation with, that's such a goofy, you know, museum thing to say, but in conversation with my lineage and the names in the past that I've started to, invoke and call into my work. And so that I don't, because the way I was raised and the way I moved around a lot, this like crazy story, it's all in the book, but like, as a result of these things, I felt somewhat disconnected from anything. I was like, oh, I'm just out here alone. I'm this weirdo. No one really gets it. I'm just going to have to make my own way. Now that I'm too old now to make my own way. That's a thing for me that like the idea that I'm terminally unique and no one can ever understand for me is a self view that belongs in my teens and 20s. I'm in my 40s. I am wonderful, but people can understand and must. And it's just a matter of finding. And so I'm aware that the way that I am, even when I told you about my name, it was the first time it dawned on me like, oh yeah, that's, I come from a lineage of like people that are on some, like, I'm not the first person in my family lineage to do what I'm doing. That's the thing. And so I guess part of the question I have is like, are there messages that people from the ancestry have for me?
Could you ask a specific question of them? The answer is no off the bat, but then I know better that sometimes a no means let's reframe the question. Is there someone in particular?
The question I have, yes, there is someone in particular.
Yeah.
I have a great, great, great grandmother, Sophie, who I write about in my book.
Sophie?
Uh-huh. Who I write about in my book. And briefly, I just invoke her in the introduction because I was researching and for some reason she's the person I landed on. And I thought about her life and her moment. And I thought about, you know, I write that I would want her to like know my kids and see where her life led. And I guess my question I have for her is like, does she need anything from me? What can I do for her?
Okay. I just started connecting with her as soon as you said her name, so she's here. She's so easy to connect with. Just give me a moment. Do you need anything of him? No. Just for you to understand how much love there is for you. Whew. You're doing the work we couldn't do then. You're doing the work none of us have been able to do before now. You are the voice for all of us. Please trust and know it. How important it is that you speak from your heart. We're all here in the alignment in the other realms, just jumping up and down, cheering you on. All there is love, baby. All there is love. I can hear the way she talks, but I'm definitely not going to do it. It's not appropriate. It's like the overwhelming senses. I don't need anything from you except that you tell the truth the way you already are. And I need you to know that I am here. And when you invoke me, I am there immediately. And I am communicating to you. And you're not making it up when you hear me and feel me. You're not making it up. And you could even, if you chose to, you could write from my voice. You could write an entire book from my voice. You could say, my name, will you come to me? Immediately I'm present. Listen to your heart and listen to the words that pass through your mind like passive wind passing through the mind and write them down. And that is me talking. Our voices live like whispers on the wind now. But you are a wind portal. You can hear the wind where so many others cannot. Don't give up the poetic. Don't lose your connection to the poetic realm due to your, to the necessities of the world you live in. You know, the cynicism and the survivalism and the, you can apply those practical concerns while, or practical necessity actions you need to apply while keeping a heart of poetry alive within yourself. Do you understand? That's how you keep us alive, and that's how you activate us in the world now, is you allow the poetry of our lives to come through your heart and be expressed as words that only you can hear and only you can form. What else? Carvel.
I think that's all. That's all for now. That's all I can hold right now.
Okay. All right. Okay, let me close the records here. Oof. Okay, so I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion. The lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. I ask that you return Sophie and Carvel to their energy to themselves now. I ask that you return them to their complete human wholeness now. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Carvel Omega Wallace the II are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Carvel Omega Wallace the II are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of Carvel Omega Wallace the II are now closed. Amen, amen, amen. There's always a last nugget when the energy of someone else is pulling out of my awareness. And the way I could say what that is here was, it takes a lot. There's an acknowledgement from the other side, from your team, your guides, just from like the divine itself, that it takes a lot to be a quintuple Libra in this world. And that is not, that does not go without. They see that. They know how hard it is to be you emotionally, how the light of love breaks through your heart and burns through your heart and cries from your heart and all the feelings through the heart. How intense that is and what a thing it is to carry. So there are like all these blessings they show me on the work you're doing because you're willing to let the fire burn and articulate it for us, for the people reading it. That is not a small undertaking, and it is bowed to and respected from the realms beyond. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you.
I'm going to be all fucked up all day now. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
That's welcome to the Libra.
People up.
That was incredible. Thank you, Carvel, for joining us. Yeah.
I that woman, my God, the love. You are certainly loved. She has such a capacity for love. Her heart is like, pfft. I don't think I ever felt that much love, like that much human love in my own body before. Yeah. Like what it would be like to be loved like that by a person. That is an interesting question for me. This has been profound. Like, just this has been really profound for me. This whole conversation, your energy, your records, Sophie. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us today.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I mean, I'm obviously overwhelmed. I just, I don't want to try to find words for it.
Awesome. Well, keep doing the work you're doing. Usually we say do your work, which is like self-work, but I think in this case it's keep doing your work, which is what you're doing.
I will.
Yeah, apparently the world really, really needs it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to stop recording now.
That's all right.
Us too.
Bid me farewell.
Bye.
All
right.
Love you all. Bye.
Were you asking for all of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
And are you recording?
I am.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.